Hello everyone, and welcome to today's Austrian Wine Time Masterclass with Kathy Moser of Sepp Moser. My name is Antoinette Landejean from Cork and Fork in Washington, DC. We are a premium wine store founded by a multi-generational flying winemaker originally from Champagne, France. I'd like to introduce you to today's presenter, Kathy. The Moser family is one of Austria's grand traditional viticultural dynasties with roots dating back to the 12th century. The most famous recent descendant of this family is the renowned viticulture pioneer, Dr. Lenz Moser, who in the 1950s developed a vine training called the Lenz Moser system. But it was not until 1987 that the Sepp Moser estate reinvented into its current state. In 2000, Nicholas Moser took over the management of the winery, building a state-of-the-art facility. In 2006, Sepp Moser officially moved to certified biodynamic viticulture, and in 2009, they released the first officially certified organic wine. The estate focus is to cultivate healthy vines growing on balanced, vigorous soils. Sepp Moser, under the direction of Nicky Moser, is one of Austria's first wine estates to have converted to biodynamic viniculture. For those joining us live, we'd love to hear from you. Place your questions in the Q&A and we'll get to them, time allowing. Since our guest is joining us live from Austria, quite a few hours ahead of us here in the United States, we will move immediately into the presentation. Kathy, please introduce yourself and your beautiful winery.
Hello, I will just quickly share my presentation with you. One second. And great, good. So good evening. My name is Kathy. I am the 17th generation, like a member of the 17th generation of the Moser family, being involved in the wine business. At the moment it's my parents running the company, but I'm also involved more in winemaking, also export and sales. So we will just start. This is the map of the Austrian wine regions. You can see that the Austrian viticulture is more focused on the eastern parts because more on the west are the Alps. And we are located in the Kremstal area. This is where we live. This is where our winery is. But we also do have vineyards here in Apetlun in the Neusiedler See area, which gives us the opportunity to have a lot big and broad portfolio of different wines. We do have sparkling wine, we do have white wine, we have a total of, I think, 8 different Grüne Veltliners, because we have a lot of single vineyards that are very unique and we want to have every wine extra somehow. And then in the Neusiedler See area, of course, we have red wines, but also sweet wines. So we will taste 6 of the wines today, and I'm very excited to show it to you. So about the Kremstal, there we have 24 hectares in total. The soil is loess and conglomerate, at least where we are located, because the Kremstal is a very, very unique area too, a small region with only 2,000 hectares. And we are located, wait a minute, can maybe yeah. So here you have the city of Krems, and we're neighboring the Wachau Valley and the Kamptal Valley. And here is on the other side of the Danube, there's the Traisental. So the soils, here is Rohrendorf next to the city Krems and the Krems River. And here you can really see also the relief of the area. It's really opening up. We're starting here, the Danube, in the very narrow Wachau Valley with much harsher climates than we do have here in Kremstal. We get a lot of cold winds from the north, from the Wood Quarter. There's a big plateau in the north, which also makes a big temperature difference between day and night. So it can, during summer, it might have like 37 degrees during the day, but then at night the winds fall down into the valley and cool down everything. So you really need a jacket. Then it's like 15 degrees or something. Yeah. And also, like, coming from this very narrow valley, the soil changes a lot, or the terroir, because here we have more this primary rock influence, whereas when the valley gets broader, we have a lot of loess, especially here in the Danube Valley, and also conglomerate soil. In this area, there was an ocean like millions of years ago, and there was a river delta somewhere around this area. So we have, at first we have like those old gravel that was brought by those old rivers, like the old Danube. And then it got hard stone, like conglomerate stone with fine sand. And after the ice age, we also got this loess layer on top. So very unique soil. You see, on the steeper parts, it's more like this rocky conglomerate, and then we have loess. Yes, so our varieties in Kremstal are Grüner Veltliner, Riesling. We do have a little bit of Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc too, and Pinot Noir, which was actually during the Middle Ages the main variety in Austria, like in our area, because the monks came from Burgundy. They settled down to build the monasteries, and of course they brought their own wine grapes. Nowadays you don't find a lot of Pinot Noir anymore in our area, but still I think it's but the main variety of course is Grüner Veltliner. Yeah, so this is like the typical look of the Kremstal. We do have terrace vineyards because the loess is very easy to move, and basically everything can be done with the tractors. So the Neusiedlersee area, this is on the very east of Austria. It's on the border to Hungary, and our vineyards are located here in Apetlon. This is actually also the lowest point of Austria, with 104 meters above the sea level. So it's very low. We have the Pannonian influence from coming from the Hungarian side, and also big influence by the Neusiedlersee River. River lake, which also makes the area pretty famous for sweet wines because of the humidity during summer and autumn. We get easily botrytis, and so it's a very famous area for sweet wine. The soil there is very dark Chernozem with partially gravel, and apparently the soils there can be quite salty, also because of the Neusiedler Lake. It's a lake that is not filled by a river, but it's only filled with rainwater. So all the soils there can be quite salty. We do have a big focus on Zweigelt there. We will also taste two different Zweigelts from Apetlon. And we also do have a little bit Merlot and some Pinot Blanc, Chardonnay, Muscat we will also try. But this we use for sparkling wine, for sweet wines. Yeah, so this is how it looks there. You can see it's a very different landscape than in the Kremstal area, where the plots are quite small. And here our biggest vineyard in this area has 14 hectares in total, which is on the one hand nice because we are not influenced by any conventional neighbors. We are organic and we don't want to have any influence from outside. But also, you know, if you're working in those rows, it can be pretty tiring. It takes a few hours to go from one side to the other one. Yeah. Yeah, so just a few key facts until we continue with a little bit of history. In total, we have 51 hectares, which are divided to Kremstal and Neusiedlersee. We have a long family tradition and the Demeter certification we have since 2009. Yeah, so the history of the family goes back, to I think it was 1400 something when one of my ancestors took over a wine cellar from the monasteries. Back then, the farmers were not free, so they could only work for the landlords, which was also in a lot of cases the church. The family was always very deeply connected to the wines. And then Lenz Moser, he is my great-grandfather. He was probably the most famous Moser. He was inventing the high draining system. Before it was, the wines were just grown in like a bush system somehow. So there was one little stick in the middle and the wine leaves and shoots were just bound up. Everything was really low and it was a lot of manual work. So in Austria, we call winemakers also Weinhauer, which is like, how to translate it, maybe like wine hitter, because we always had to go with the shovel and with different tools to get the plants away, to keep everything clean. Yeah, so after the First World War, there was a huge step in the mechanization of agriculture in general. And Lenz Moser thought, okay, why not also do it for viticulture? And he used a lot of very crazy machines, also still from the First World War, amphi cars that could also swim. And he also used it for the vineyards and the turbine he used to spray the plant protection with. So what you see here is the typical Lenz Moser system, which is not used that much anymore, but it was like the start to grow the wines up on this wire system to have this space in between to go through with a tractor or machines. But back then, and this is different nowadays, it was, you can see it here a little bit, one third of the shoots and the leaves were in the middle and then one third each were on the sides, because his idea was also to not only to minimize the manual work, but also to maximize the yield. It was very important back then. So you needed a lot of sunlight for that to create a lot of sugar for the grape wines. Nowadays everything is in the middle and we don't focus that much anymore on so much leaves, because also people nowadays go into the high quality. We don't have that many grapes on the plant and therefore we don't need that much sunlight on per grape somehow. Then afterwards, also with this mechanization, there came a big point in the Austrian wine history somehow in 1978-85. There was the wine scandal that happened because there was a huge overproduction. People were producing a lot of wine but also the prices were really low. So a lot of the wines were exported. And then especially for the German market, because they liked sweeter wines, they mixed glycol into the wines to sell it for a bigger price to make the wines taste more sweet. Yeah, so back then, Lenz Moser, he already died, and he gave over his big winery to his sons, Sepp and his twin brother. And back then it was also a big winery. They exported a lot to Germany and the wholesales went down. So Lenz Moser's winery was also on the blacklist because he bought the tank from a farmer that had a contaminated batch. So really bad situation, not only for our family, but also for the whole wine industry. So my grandfather saw it that it cannot continue like that. He was always a very, very focused on quality, always loved good eating. And so he said, okay, he wants to go his own ways. His whole company was actually sold. But he said, okay, he borrowed money from friends and he started from the very beginning. Yeah, that was in 1986. And he said in his first year with his first vintage, he wants to be represented in the Austria's top 30 restaurants. And that's what he really managed. I heard stories that he had one barrel in a friend's cellar and the next barrel in a different cellar. So a lot of work, but he really focused on the quality and built again a big company with 51 hectares. Yeah, afterwards, this is our winery. This he also managed to buy back. It was built by my great grandfather. It belonged to the banks in the meantime, but after his winery went better, he really managed to get this house back from the bank. Yeah, this is where the cellar is located. We do have a small restaurant now to be opened. We do have a small shop for organic food stuff. So like an open place for basically everyone. We have concerts there and yeah. Yeah, and then in 2000, my father took over the winery and he converted to first organic and then biodynamic, which was kind of a big step, I think. His father was totally against it because he didn't know what it is. And he said that's, yeah, but for him in the end, it was important that the wines taste good and yeah, so it was my father and my mom going to visit a lot of wineries already in the 90s that were working organic and also biodynamic. They were not really sure if they want to go only organic or biodynamic. So they visited a lot of people. And biodynamic back then was not really a big thing. When my father started, he was the 14th winery in Austria. Doing the Demeter certification, and now it's more than 70. So it's really a rapid growth. But back then they had to go abroad to France, Loire and Alsace to see how the farmers there are working. And it was, I think it was in 98 when they finally really decided to go for Demeter, because it was a really bad year in Elsass. It was really wet and people really struggled. And so they visited, who was it? I think Mark Greidenweiss. And they really saw all the vineyards there and everything looked really not good because of all the rain. And but Mark Greidenweiss's wines were just so beautiful and healthy. And then they said, okay, we don't know anything about it, but we also want to become Demeter farmers. So it was a long process with lot of trial and error, because as it was so new in Austria, there was no one to really ask or to discuss things with. So my father started with actually the most complicated vineyard. We will taste also one wine from there, from this vineyard afterwards. And then in 2006, he started the whole process with the certification. We also had difficulties. 2008, for example, we lost like 40% of the crop. Also very, very wet year with a lot of mildew. But yeah, I mean, we learn with every year. And I think now we are really there, that our vineyards are perfect. And yeah, the thing also with Demeter is that you really have to react before something happens. You have to check the weather forecast. If there's mildew, for example, in the vineyards, there's nothing you can do anymore. Yeah, so... And it's obviously not only my father running the winery by his own. There's a lot of ladies by his side. So on the very left, that's my mom. She's doing like more the German market, also bookkeeping, and my sister in the middle with her baby daughter. She just founded this organic food shop in our winery. Because also because of the Demeter certification, we have a lot of friends who produce really good products, like small scale farmers. Yeah, and we also want to share it with the people around in the area. Yeah, and me on the right hand side. Maybe a little bit also about the Demeter preparations. There are two main preparations that are very important. It's horn manure on the left-hand side, and on the right-hand side, it's horn silica. The horn manure is there to give impulses to the soil fertility. So what we do is we have a preparation group with a lot of Demeter farmers. We are like 100 people. And we put cow manure into a horn and dig it into the soil and leave it there for the winter, because the idea is that the cow horn works like an antenna, to catch all the growing energies or life energies somehow, because at winter you see there's nothing growing anymore, so the air, the earth is somehow breathing in, getting all this energy into the soil, and this is where we store the horn manure. And then after this half a year we take it out again, and then comes the horn silica, which is it's a crystal that we make a powder, we mix it with water and also fill it into the horns, and we dig it into the soil in summer to get this energy of ripeness, of warmth, of sunlight. Yeah, so that's the basic idea. We're working with impulses here. So this is like homeopathy. It gives impulses to balance everything. So horn manure for this impulse of fertility. We don't need much. We take a small ball like this. We stir it for 1 hour, and then we bring it into the ground in the evening. And the horn silica, we start with the veraison. So when the grapes berries turn red or get a little bit softer, then we get in with this ripening impulse and this sunlight. And actually you have to be very careful with the horn silica. We spray it in the morning, but if it gets too late, you can really see that you can burn your wines. So you really need to be careful. Even though it's such a, it's homeopathy, you know, there's basically nothing in there, but it happens that you burn the plants if you're not careful with that. yeah, this is how it works. So we steer it to get this information into the water, and the water then carries it there. So it's not about the matter or the chemistry or anything. It's just the information stored into the water. And also very important are the compost preparations. We don't use any artificial fertilizer or anything. So compost for us is quite important. Just a few different, I won't go into detail here. So what is also very important for us is the cover crop management. As we are organic certified in Europe, you have to have the area between the vines covered with anything. We usually use a mix of different plants. So legumes that store nitrogen, flowering plants, deep rooting plants, just to give air to the soil, to give nutrients to the soil, and to have it covered to protect it from erosion. Also very important aspect for the biodynamic farmers is animal life. So we are always looking to have a healthy organism, and this doesn't work with monoculture. Of course, wine production is a big monoculture because we don't have to want to have, I don't know, a tree, for example, in a vineyard is disturbing because you can't go through with the tractor anymore. So for us, it's very important to interrupt this monoculture with trees, with hedges, with the cover crops. And then also we keep sheep in the vineyards. We just had the first lambs this week, this summer, yeah. And our new project are the chicken, where we sell the eggs in our own shop. So it's very local and small, but it's really nice to just have their own products and own animals. And what is also cool about the chicken, we keep them also in the vineyard. We try to have the area directly underneath the vines free from any plants because of water. And also if it grows too much in, then you need a lot of aeration through the vines so you don't have problems with the funguses. But what is really good about the chicken is that usually we go through with the tractor to keep this area free. And we went just once with the tractor, then we had the chicken there and they were digging so much to look for worms underneath the vines. So let's see, maybe it's a project for the future to keep a lot of chicken in the vineyards and also to reduce the tractor hours. And then also this is also a really cool project that doesn't pay off at all because it's a lot of work are the horses. My sister has two horses. It's Norica, which is an old Austrian breed. And yeah, we're starting slowly. They're quite young and they still need to be trained. So we start a little bit of plowing in the vineyards and we did one harvest. We harvested one vineyard last week, last harvest. So, and it's really nice to work with the horses in the vineyards because it's just so quiet. It's totally different like working with the tractors. But yeah, I mean, of course we have 51 hectares to work and we would need a lot of horses to do everything with them. Yeah, also very important for us is the manual harvest. We don't want to go through with the machine because of the soil density. It's important to keep it soft. And also our people know how to harvest and they can distinguish between a healthy grape and something that is rotten, and a machine can't do that. So for us, it's the quality aspect that we harvest everything with the hand. And the wine cellar is also then, I mean, of course, the grapes that come in needs to be healthy and perfect. And this is something you can lift up in the cellar, but you can't do anything better anymore. So what we really try is to do as less as possible, as little as possible, to not influence the wine so much. For example, you see it here on this picture, we try to bottle the sulfur-free wines with gravity, so without the bottling machine, because it's more gentle. Everything is spontaneous fermented. We don't use any enzymes. And also very important, I think, is we don't follow any recipes. So we go through, we taste every day, every batch. We don't do any analyzes. We don't want to change the pH. We harvest at the right time. So for us, it's important to taste the wines, to be with the wines all the time, and to feel what they are doing, and then to react on that. And then it's not like, okay, this wine finished the fermentation, now we rack it and we sulfur it. We taste it, we see if it needs to be racked, we see if it needs to be sulfured, because the longer you keep it on a full lees, the later you have to sulfur it, and then you don't need to put so much in. So this is very important for us. We also do in total now 4 different wines that are completely without sulfur addition. Of course, the amount of, like, the number of the bottles is much smaller than for the normal wines. But we also learned a lot from doing the sulfur-free wines. You have to treat the wines very different. You should not be afraid of oxygen. You need an oxidation at the beginning if you want to have a wine without sulfur. And also important for us is we don't use new oak barrels. We buy everything secondhand from a French company because we don't want to have this really oaky taste in the wines. Yeah, so we are also members of the Österreichische Traditionsweingüter, like the Austrian traditional wineries, who are trying or who introduced like a cru system similar to the Burgundy one. At the moment, we only have Erste Lage, which would be like a premier cru, because it's a very long process to actually find out which vineyards are the best ones. And I think it's also difficult now because some of the vineyards with the very long tradition are not that good anymore because of climate change. Some of the vineyards might be too dry or too hot, so you can't only rely on the historical data. It's a very interesting process to certify the vineyards. At the moment we do have 3 different vineyards which are called Erste Lagen with Riesling and Grüner Veltliner. That brings us to the tasting. Grüner Veltliner Gebling is Kremstal DAC Reserve. DAC means Districtus Austriae Controllatus, like Districted Austrian Control, meaning that the wine needs to be typical for the area. For Kremstal, it's only for 2 different grape varieties, which are Grüner Veltliner and Riesling. The Gebling is a very interesting vineyard. It was first mentioned in 1284. It has a conglomerate in the subsoil with a little bit of loess on the top, but it's very rocky. the terraces are quite steep. It's up to 45 degrees. And then sometimes it's really like two rows of wines, and then there's the next terrace down, two rows of wines. It's really hard to drive a tractor there. This wine was aged and fermented only in stainless steel with 8 months of fine yeast contact. Yeah. What is special about the Loess soil, I think, is that because it's a very calcareous material that is coming from the Alps, being brought by the winds after the ice ages. So this chalk is somehow really eating the acidity. All the wines are very low in the acidity, but still always they have this very creamy taste, and I think they're very easy and pleasant to drink. Yeah, then we have the Grüner Veltliner Schnabel 2016. I found it really cool because the current vintage is 2019, but we still have a little bit of the 2016 in stock. And I'm always really happy to show, especially the single vineyard wines, to show a little bit older vintages too. Because I think they show their potential just after a few years. They need a little bit of time to develop. Yeah, so Schnabel is a vineyard also again with Loess and conglomerate. But this vineyard is really, really a conglomerate vineyard. So you always have a lot of minerality in the wines. It was aged in the 2,500 liter barrels of Austrian wine, Austrian oak, and also stored again 5 months on fine lees. It's and it's unfiltered because again we didn't follow a recipe. If you taste the wine now, you see it's really clean. But if we have the time, and we do have the time for the single vineyard wines, they cannot be released 1 year before 1 year after the harvest. And if you really have the time and to settle it just with gravity, you know, why should you filter it? Every process, every step you do with the wines takes out some aromas or character. So sometimes we can avoid it, sometimes we filter our wines because, yeah. Yeah, then we have something a little bit different, I think. It's Grüner Veltliner Fundamental 2019. This wine comes from our coldest vineyard. This is also the vineyard where my father started his biodynamic farming. It's only stainless steel fermented, but it's completely without sulfur, it's completely unfined and unfiltered. So Grüner Veltliner always tends to have a lot of protein, so protein stabilization would be usually something you really have to do with Grüner Veltliner, but as it's cloudy anyways, it's also unfined. You see that the taste is a little bit different than what you would expect from a normal Grüner Veltliner. It's because of the lack of sulfur. Sulfur is keeping these primary aromas, like fresh aromas, but also it narrows the wines down somehow. So it kind of preserves the status quo. With a certain oxidation, the aromas really change. It also, I think it has a little bit of tannins too, like this grip on the palate. It does not come from any skin fermentation. It's just, how it happened, I don't know. Yeah, this is actually how the labels are made. So we wanted to really stress that the wines are handcrafted wines, and especially the natural wines are very unique and very special. So we wanted to do something like handmade, but that's kind of a lot of work. So I was working together with a small print shop. It's in Vienna, and they focus on analog art, like non-digital things. And they came up with this idea to use those patterns that were used in the 50s and 60s to decorate the living room walls. And this is how we do the labels. So every bottle that you have in your hands is like a little bit different. So this is the first wine from Burgenland, like from the area next to Hungary. It's Muscat Otonel, a very aromatic grape, a little bit different than Gelber Muscatella. Gelber Muscatella, I think, is known a little bit more than Muscat Otonel. I think that Muscat Otonel goes more, a little bit more the direction Tramina. So it has this more roses, rich and flowery taste, whereas the Gelber Muscatella is more fresh, more like this apple pear taste. This wine was cold macerated for 4 days without fermentation. Then we pressed it, and it was then fermented and aged in the 2,500 liter barrels of Austrian oak. And it stayed 13 months on the full lees, and then was bottled from the full lees. So maybe it's a little bit too cloudy, but it's still okay. Again, unfiltered, unfined in alt sulfurge, and also very low in alcohol. Yeah, classic style Zweigelt. The classic style wines I really like because they are entry level wines, but they are like really uncomplicated and typical Austria. So this Zweigelt was just fermented in stainless steel. We keep the skin contact quite short to preserve the freshness and the light aromas. It's low in alcohol, higher in acidity than our Grüner Veltliners coming from the Löss. But very easy drinking also important to say, maybe the classic style wines are not Demeter certified, because in some years we have to buy grapes from other farmers, so it's only organic. It's nearly impossible to get Demeter certified grapes in Austria. Yeah, and the last wine is Zweigelt Hedwighof, also coming from Burgenland, also stainless steel fermented and also aged. So there's no oak involved. It has a little bit more alcohol, and I think compared to the classic style, it's a little bit more ripe. It has more soft tannins. It's more silky. And yeah, also like a really good wine. I like it a lot because some people don't like oak in the red wines, and this would be perfect even with meat dishes. Good, that was the last wine. I hope you enjoyed my presentation, and yeah, I hope you also have some questions.
Great. Thank you so much, Kathy. That was amazing. We don't have any questions right now, but I do want to thank you for this incredible presentation and introduction to your winery. Are there any final thoughts you'd like to share before we say goodnight to the group?
Like me? Sorry. I don't know.
For example, is Sepp Moser open to the public? Do you accept tourists and visit?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, you can come tasting anytime. Of course, we are always happy if people are coming. Yeah, if you want to have a tour, you should probably call first. But we are opening our restaurant mid of May. So also afterwards, we will be able to serve food to the wine tasting. And yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Well, Ben does have a question. Austria seems like it's becoming very popular in the United States recently. How has Austria's wine industry changed in the last decade?
I think that Austria is really focusing on the high quality sector. The Austrian Wine Marketing Board, which was founded after the wine scandal, is doing really a great job. we are a small country. We don't have a big surface of viticulture. So what we can do is focus on quality. And there are statistics every year. I just saw them last week. And you can really see that the value of the exports is really increasing, whereas the amount is stagnating. So yeah, focus on quality. That's the only thing we can do. No mass production.
Excellent. Well, thanks again. I'm going to wrap up the class tonight. So thanks for joining us tonight, Kathy.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you
making the trip, so to speak, despite the time difference. We appreciate everyone's interest in the great wines of Austria and encourage you to visit our website calendar at corkandfork.co to view the upcoming Austrian wine events with some of the region's greatest producers, such as Sepp Moser. And this has been an absolute pleasure, a true honor to have Sepp Moser, one of our favorite Austrian producers, join us. So thank you again, Kathy, and I wish you a lovely evening. And good night to everyone watching, and I'll end the meeting for all. Good night.
Good night. Thank you.